Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Yeah, well, it could be dangerous. We're back live, and friend of Trump, legend Roger Stone, who... TheStoneColdTruth.com, the Stone Zone. I believe that's what it is. Anyway, hello, Mr. Stone.
Mitch, great to be with you.
It's good to have you on the show. And I know I did read one tweet where the sycophant media impeach Donald Trump 24/7 channels were excited about this DOJ finding that President Trump apparently did not have his phones tapped, and you said fake news. The FISA court already scolded the Obama administration for spying on 30,000 people. Your response on this DOJ finding?
Yeah, they're just simply wrong. The FISA court found in November, which was not reported in the New York Times, the Washington Post, but was reported by Circa News, and I have retrieved the documents, which are publicly available, that the Obama administration, under the direction of the NSA, spied on at least 30,000 Americans for what appears to be political reasons. I believe I was among those spied upon, which is why I have not heard from Mr. Mueller or his staff since they have read my email and monitored my phone calls and read my text messages. Mitch, they know I don't know any Russians, that I never had any communications with any Russians or anyone fronting for the Russians. So I still believe, as Judge Napolitano has also established, that Trump Tower was under surveillance, and the Obama administration actually used government spying agencies to do their political dirty work. This is far worse than anything that happened allegedly in Watergate.
Okay, but you say 30,000 Americans. What I'm talking about are, like you mentioned, yourself and a handful of people that really matter. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. But there's no recognition in any mainstream press outlet to that effect.
Well, but also nobody. The FISA court is a formal federal entity. It is their decision, or I should say, their documentation.
Right, but they said 30,000. They didn't say Roger Stone. And...
No, but the Washington Post reported on January 20th of this year, Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, and Carter Page were among those surveillance.
Okay.
Now, Mitch, you're not questioning the great New York Times, are you?
Oh, never. I wouldn't do that. I mean, talk to Daniel Ellsberg about that. No, he probably loved him, too. No, all I'm saying is...
I'll tell you, it's interesting. Ellsberg right now, and you know this, is an attorney representing Julian Assange.
Oh, is that right? By the way, Julian Assange, and I think now we're getting some traction on this from Dana Rohrabacher, but this questioning of the premise that the Russians did the quote-unquote hack, whether it was just leaked information and people gobbled it up. I mean, we've been told 17 agencies, U.S. agencies, agree it was the Russians. Of course, only three were involved. But do you still question the premise?
Yes, a terrific piece in The Nation, hardly a right-wing organ,
right.
Almost 2 weeks ago, which a number of counterterrorism experts have come forward and said the actual evidence points to a more likely scenario in which information from the DNC was downloaded to thumb drives and spirited out the back door. We have seen at least Craig Murray, who is a British diplomat, has come forward to say that he was among those who received that data, presumably from Seth Rich, although he has not said so, and passed it on to Assange. Again, Assange is a journalist. Are we accusing him of publishing purloined material? Well, then we better read the Pentagon Papers case,
right.
New York Times versus U.S. government. The Washington Post, the New York Times publish classified, stolen information every day. That's what journalists.
Well, and we should say for the record, and I've been on the Seth Rich case because I don't know what goes back to my family mother's side. We had mafia killers on my mother's side, but you know, the guy was shot in the back. They didn't take his wallet, but beyond that, Julian Assange went on international television and put up a $20,000 reward for his killer, which I'm sure Julian Assange doesn't do for every victim of a robbery gone bad. in D.C. But yet,
precisely. I mean, so what that is, I think, is an indication that Rich is a source. Now, because he's a professional journalist, Assange will never come forward and say,
right,
yes, Seth Rich was my source.
But he did offer the $20,000 reward.
Which, if it doesn't say the same thing, then you're tone deaf.
Yeah, you're smoking something funny. And the press all went away on that because the family apparently said they're sick of the conspiracy stories. And Morning Joe and the rest said, you're crazy. And they were tweeting. Yeah, but why does Morning Joe or the others accept that it was a robbery gone bad? I mean, what's the basis for that?
Well, not only that, but if you can find a quote on the record from Seth Rich's father in which he said, in the immediate aftermath of the murder, his wallet, his ring, his watch, and his cash were untouched.
Right. So what are they?
So they got to the family? Robbery,
yeah.
Right. So the family reverses itself. The family first hires a private detective to try to get to the bottom of who killed their son. Then they fire him, and suddenly they have a paid spokesman whose other client turns out to be the Democratic
National Committee. Right. I saw him, on some show.
Can you say payoff? Can you say cover up? Maybe they were threatened. Who knows?
Who knows?
But I just find it odd that any parent would seem to have no interest whatsoever in the murder of their child. That just makes no sense.
It doesn't, and it's reduced in the minds of the mainstream press to the conspiracy press and the conspiracy websites and blogs and your buddy Alex Jones. But as you say, Alex Jones has 5 million users every week, or what's the deal on that?
It can even be greater. In order to determine how many people are watching, you'd have to go to the 6 different platforms where it's up in real time: YouTube Live, Facebook Live, and then, of course, later in podcast. 5 million on the low side. The Friday before the election, he had 18 million viewers. This is leaving, Sean Hannity in the dust.
And he sounds like Wallace Beery or Dwight Eisenhower on a good day. I mean, he's got that gravelly voice,
Yeah, he's kind of the poor man's Rush Limbaugh.
But, yeah, he's like Southside Johnny, We're having a party. Well, you have that sort of more preppy kind of Ivy League demeanor, which best way.
Well, but he understands that in order to garner an audience, of course you have to use sarcasm, parody, drama. You have to be interesting. You have to be fun.
What a concept.
Entertaining.
Hey, what happened to Megan? We're kind of going off the track here, but just Megan Kelly, is she done now, or what's her deal?
It appears that way. My last understanding was that her show was canceled. So in the great dust-up between Alex Jones and Megan Kelly, he took her down.
Alex won in the long-range scheme of things.
His ratings in terms of viewers went up, and her show got canceled. Yeah, I'd say that he won that exchange.
Now, I want to come back after the break because you lived through Nixon and the silent majority and the fact that, Nixon beat McGovern by 16 million votes, if memory serves. And Trump has this, quote, 33%. I don't know if you agree with that number, but what's the plan going forward to try to pass legislation? Roger Stone, our guest, and also the sycophantic attacks against the president on his Dreamer policy. We'll come back. The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com. Our guest is Roger Stone, who's the Netflix documentary Get Me, Roger Stone, highly acclaimed, fantastic, I recommend it. Had worked for the committee to reelect the president back in 1972, the youngest member of CREEP. Is that right, Roger?
Certainly the youngest member to go to the grand jury. Absolutely.
I thought it was cool because I masqueraded as Pat Goodell and got Roger Stone on the phone for Roger Mudd on the phone for 20 minutes in college. But you've trumped me 1,000 times over. This whole thing with the Dreamers, everybody in the press is killing the president on this, even though President Obama said in 2012 that it's a temporary stopgap measure. So how is this playing and how is this affecting his base and how do you see it developing?
I must say, I think the president has handled this poorly. I'm trying to understand where he is on this. All I seem to be seeing are mixed messages. He made several comments prior to his decision that seemed to indicate that he understood the atmospherics of being against children who come to this country through no fault of their own and who have assimilated. who want to stay here and become and continue to be productive members of society.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was moving towards a grand compromise here that would sit well with the American people, but be, you know, acceptable to his base. Instead, he seems to have just tossed the ball completely to the Congress. And then, backing off of that, he says, well, if they can't solve the problem, I'll revisit it.
Right.
To me, it looks like missed opportunity. That's how I read it.
And by saying I'll revisit it, he's taking away his leverage if he wants to, you know, scold or prod Congress into doing something, because they then think, well, he'll just up the executive order because he'll revisit. What does revisit mean other than that?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think he had an opportunity to really not only do the right thing from a public policy point of view, disarm his critics, and steal a march on the Congress. I think you're exactly right. Now, if you're the Congress, you simply say, okay, he tossed the ball to us, we'll just toss it back to him.
Right. To me, if he gets tax reform, and now, of course, I heard somebody say, well, they're not going to do 15% on the corporate rate. They may do 25%, which, again, would be an improvement. But if he doesn't have the kind of Reagan-style growth that you remember from 1983, 4, and so forth, I mean, that's not good. I mean, he's kind of putting the pressure on with timetables being short and big agenda items stacked up and a recalcitrant Congress. So what do you see happening?
You know, I think the single most important thing that he can do is to go to the mat for a 15% corporate tax rate for businesses big and small. If our corporate tax rate was below Mexico, Canada, China, Japan, you would see companies currently doing business in those places because it's cheaper and more profitable come back to the United States to expand here, to hire here, to create jobs here.
We didn't recycle? You did recycle. Can we try to get him back? All right, sorry, we lost Roger Stone. A technical issue on the phones there, Brian Beebe, but certainly an interesting man, Roger Stone.
I did that. That was my fault.
You didn't do it. Your hands were not on the dials.
That was my fault.
We're going to try to get him back on. You know, people have talked to me, I shouldn't lower myself. You know what? He's a great guest. You know, guests don't have to be university loved. To me, they're going to be interesting, dynamic.
Well spoken, well thought out positions.
And he says hate is more powerful than love, and he revels in people's hatred. Those kinds of quotes.
Been around it for a long time.
Yeah, well, age 20 before the grand jury on the Watergate stuff. How about that?
Deep in it for that long.
Wrote the book on the case on the men who killed Kennedy, the case against LBJ. You know, of course, he's an equal opportunity critic. He wrote a book on the Bushes called The Bush Crime Family, book. Then he wrote a book on the Clinton women, the Clinton war on women. No, huh? No luck? Oh, his voicemail, yeah. Well, I'm sorry, folks. We had Roger Stone. We lost the call. We don't know why, because it could be his phone, too.
Yeah.
It could be the president trying to call him, that kind of thing. But no, he was kind of down on the president on the Dreamer thing. And then he has his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, who is really hated by progressives, which, you know, big time, often called Jefferson Davis Sessions, doing the announcement. And they want Congress to change it. And if Congress doesn't change it, they will revisit. The point is, here's the deal. The opponents of any kind of immigration reform say it's amnesty. You can't give amnesty. You want to give amnesty. Well, first of all, how are we giving amnesty to children who didn't commit a crime? Did a child commit a crime by coming here with their parents when they're 5 or 3? I'm not sure. We got Roger Stone back on the phone. Sorry about that, Roger. We had some phone issues there. How you doing?
Yeah, probably the NSA. I'm quite certain that
probably
I've been
is.
Watched.
But here's the thing, and I know you're a master communicator, and I have this desire to actually tell the president, no, don't say that. How do you commit amnesty where you're granting amnesty, which is the big talk radio conservative line? First of all, if you're a child being brought by your parents, you're not committing a crime. You're a child. So I wouldn't think you'd have to grant amnesty to a child, first of all. And I kind of want the president to be able to say things like that, you know, on the fly.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I mean, I just think this was a golden opportunity to outmaneuver his critics. And I really thought he was going to gut up to it. He made a number of statements prior to his decision that seemed to indicate to me that that's where he was headed. And then suddenly, boom, nothing.
Well, they're blaming
By the way, I'm told that Jeff Sessions was a major influence in this decision, which is yet another strike against Jeff Sessions.
Well, exactly.
So far, has been an extraordinary disappointment.
Well, Jeff Sessions, and bless his heart, he may be a wonderful family man and the rest, but when I look at him, I can't help but think he probably said the Beatles had too long a hair. They should get a haircut. You know, it just kind of, reminds me.
Yeah, culturally, the guy is out to lunch. I mean, look, this is a guy who, as the Alabama Attorney General, supported a three strikes law in which if you were caught selling marijuana three times, you could be executed.
Yeah, Jeff is—he's old school.
Ernest T. Bass. He looks.
Well, that could be true.
He's in the James O. Eastland brand of
Mississippi,
politics.
Mississippi. Yes, indeed. Back to your white supremacy. By the way, and you're big on language. Now it seems that if you are conservative or you are in any way contrarian against progressive thought or Hillary or Obama, in media circles, you are now a racist, white supremacist, Neanderthal. I mean, it used to be that Nazis were Nazis and commies were commies. And I know Joe McCarthy went a long way on the commie thing, and people were afraid to say what they thought. But now it's gone the other way, don't you think?
Yeah, I really think one of the great contributions of my friend Bill Buckley, God rest his soul, was that he decoupled American conservatism from bigotry, racism, and anti-Semitism. It became perfectly respectable to be an enlightened conservative. Now, this all just has devolved into name-calling.
Yeah.
If you disagree, well, then you must be a white supremacist, you must be a racist, you must be a bigot. Or in the case of the allegations of Russian collusion. Mitch, my family members were mowed down in the streets of Budapest in 1956 by Russian tanks. Don't say I'm in bed with the Russians. It's insulting.
Yes. And I'm sorry about that, about your family. But because I grew up in Indiana back in the day when they would run full-page ads in Indianapolis Star saying, are you tired of Birch Bayh canceling Richard Lugar's vote? I mean, if you were anywhere left in those days, you were a commie, you were a pinko. So, I mean, that was that way for decades. And
well, plus, in reality, I think if they look closely, they'd find that Dick Lugar and Birch Bayh were voting the same more often than they were not.
That's true. Well, that's true. And actually, the only Republican my mother ever voted for was Richard Lugar in that final primary where he lost to the guy on the far right. So it's amazing.
Once referred to as Richard Nixon's favorite mayor.
Oh, yeah. Back in 68, where they had no riots the night of the King assassination, which was interesting, and they credit RFK, and more power to him. But it was a well behaved city in that regard. But anyway, moving right along, if Donald Trump doesn't get tax reform done or something done, infrastructure something this year, how does it bode well for the 2018 cycle?
He has to either produce in terms of tax reform or he needs to position himself to run against those who have stopped him from doing so. By that, I mean running against the two-party duopoly, running against the elites of both parties by simply saying, folks, I put forward a program for reform, for economic revitalization, but these entrenched incumbent politicians who like the status quo, like things the way they are, have thwarted me. Are you with me or are you with them? Alternatively, he simply buys the failure or buys into the failure and bears responsibility for the failure of the Republicans to get anything done while they have control of both houses. To me, it's a Bill Clinton triangulation type strategy, and he seems to be headed in that direction.
That's true.
He's finally figured out that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are not his friends nor his allies.
Well, that's a good point. I think he is going out in front on tax reform going to North Dakota because Reagan would go on TV 2 days before the vote and Bill Clinton would sell his stuff in front of above the press and to the people. And I think President Trump gave the baton to the Congress on health care. I hope he gets in front on this, and I'm guessing you're advising him to do that.
That would certainly be consistent with my advice. And so far, so good. This is the ballgame, in my view. if he can get us a corporate tax cut, which, again, is not just for Microsoft. It's also for the neighborhood grocery store.
Right, I agree.
You know, it's for the bodega down on the corner. Then I think it's a whole new ball game. But if he fails there, and if they, frankly, he should be horse trading, and he could have horse traded on DACA in return for funding for the wall.
Yeah, we could do that, or I don't know what's going to happen now. By the way, we got to go, but I think we just learned in recent weeks that the mayor of Dallas was a CIA informant, right? Going back to a quick JFK assassination question. The mayor of Dallas?
Yes. Of course, whose brother was an active participant in the
Bay of Pigs.
In the events of that day.
That's right. And the picture of George Bush, I hate to sound like a wacko, but it looks just like him on the front of the school book depository, and that looks like him exactly.
Yeah, although I must tell you, I do not think it is. I actually think his very carefully structured alibi, because he was in Dallas the day before the assassination, and he was in Dallas late in the day, but he is, in fact, photographed in Tyler, Texas, giving a speech, and the local newspaper reflects it.
Right,
what's
interesting,
of course, is, as you know, is within minutes of the assassination, he calls the FBI Bureau in Houston to establish his whereabouts. Why would he do that?
Yeah, and the photo just throws me. I'm not a big George Bush guy in charge of that, but the photo was a splitting image. And we do see General Lansdale walking past the hobos. And was E. Howard Hunt one of the hobos?
Certainly conceivable. I highly recommend to you my book, The Bush Crime Family.
The Bush Crime Family, and also The Case Against LBJ, The Men Who Killed Kennedy. Roger Stone, thestonezone.com, and stonecoldtruth.com for your daily podcast. Thank you, sir.
Delighted to be here. Many thanks.
Appreciate it. Take care. Back with language, how we've lost language. I mean, everything's out of whack now. Name-calling is back in vogue. This is the Mitch Hanks Show on Facebook Live and MadisonTalks.com.